Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
So we're going to be jumping into a PT Pearl on mindset, and something that Jen and I are really passionate about helping shift people's mindsets about are your feet, and this message that we've always been taught, well, if you have foot pain, you need to put this insert or this device into your shoes, or you need to wear these special shoes. Like, no, that's not the case. We all have the mechanisms, muscles, tendons, joints in our feet to support ourselves. They might just need to get a little extra love.
I mean, trust me, I was convinced as well growing up. It was like, oh, that's not a good shoe. It doesn't have good arch support. Like, we were beaten down, I think, with this message of what we need to support our feet rather than believing that our foot is resilient enough to build the support itself. Whether you're even born with flat feet, like, no matter what, you have the ability to build function and strength within your foot when you give it the correct environment.
And trust us, we just had our first little baby, and watching his feet and how much they move and how he can move and open his toes and curl his toes and curl his whole feet. Like, we all have that ability built in. And just after 20, 30, 40 years of moving a certain way, wearing a certain type of shoe, our feet, like I said, need a little love. And one way to do that is give them the space, give them the ability to move, and get your feet in something like Vivo Barefoot shoes, because they have the space for your foot to move. They're thin and flexible so that your foot can do the movements it's supposed to when you're walking and moving throughout the day.
It's incredible to be able to hear the feedback from people who have said, I finally healed my plantar fasciitis when I stopped relying on my orthotics and the shoes that I thought were going to help me and started actually rebuilding my foot health.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's possible. Believe your foot has the ability. Maybe you need to ease into it. That's okay, right?
Totally.
But just try Vivo Barefoot. Give your toes the space that they need to flourish. And you can use code
TOB, like the Optimal Body. We have a link down in the show notes that'll take you right there. And TOB gets you 15% off your order. So grab a pair and start making a change so that you can feel something different. Okay, so today, talking a little bit into how mindset can impact our pain. And I love these topics. And this is where you and I would say, from when we started getting into physical therapy or even working with people, started realizing pretty quickly that the physical body, the pain that we feel, it doesn't just have to do with the physical body. It's so integrated into our mindset, into socially what we're doing in our world. And so I'm excited to kind of talk about how we have worked with patients or even within our own bodies, how we understand this or how we work with somebody who has persisting pains, and how we use mindset tools to be able to help them out with that, and some things that we just found in research that continues to show over and over and over again how important having a positive mindset is.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that you and I connected on like the first time we ever met.
Yeah.
I think we started talking about this kind of stuff and I was like, whoa, another PT who treats and sees the same things I do? That's crazy. So it's really cool. And it's so, this is so prevalent in what we embody on Gen Health and through our programs and everything, because in every single challenge I've done since the very beginning, since they were only 5 to 7 days, I have always put mindset tools, whether it is a weekly email that you're getting about a mindset tool or a, you know, whatever it is, like, mindset tools have always been a part of my challenges because it is not just about movement. And I'm so glad that we have some research as well to help back up what and why this is so important.
Yeah. And I mean, kind of like I said at the beginning, like when we started reading through some of the research that our lovely teammate Ceci put together for us, it just continued to help showing. I mean, they start developing all these models like the fear avoidance model or a shared vulnerability model. And the common theme throughout is that people who have or show higher levels of pain tend to show higher levels of, you know, not being able to find these positive values in their life, not being able to focus on the positive things and only kind of catastrophizing. And we consistently see this positive correlation between catastrophization mm-hmm. or fear surrounding movement and higher levels of pain.
Yes, greater disability. I mean, we see this across the board in so many different types of injuries as well. And when we start to avoid, you know, because we're afraid to go into it, and that's so common, right? I mean, of course,
yeah.
pain hits, your first thing is, I need to stop. Like, yeah. my body, your brain is literally telling you something's wrong. I need to protect you. Stop doing that thing. That's why yeah. it's signaling pain in the first place. It's stop. Oh no, something's wrong. Right. Yeah. And so our brain is naturally here to protect us. And it is natural to have that kind of avoidance of that exercise you were doing or that movement or that activity, whatever it may be. However, if we continue to avoid it, and we continue to say that activity is what caused my pain and this is why it's bad, and you know, we just catastrophize it, we just know that that pain is only going to continue, and we're not going to really be able to work through it if we continue to avoid it.
And this kind of looks like the patient that comes into the clinic, or if you go into the clinic and some of the first things you say is like, oh, well, I can't bend over and pick something up, or I can't get in and out of my car without having pain. Mm-hmm. Like, that patient or that person has already started to attach those activities with pain.
Yeah.
And our brain does this really crazy thing. The pain system in our brain, they create these things called pain maps, where they image someone's brain while they're experiencing pain, and they look at all the centers that light up. And centers that light up include those that store memories, mm-hmm. those that store emotions or create emotions, like our amygdala and our hippocampus that's involved in memory. And those areas are so active when people are in pain. Well, why would that be? It's because we have the memories of us doing those activities previously and experiencing pain. Mm-hmm. We have the emotions surrounding that fear or anxiety that come with that pain. Mm-hmm. So it's a really real thing.
It really is.
But one of the things that we need to actively try and do is break those. We need to break those pain patterns that start to develop, because the longer we stay in that, the stronger those circuit connections are going to become.
Yeah. And we literally see from research, you know, how it points out that the pain pathways in your central nervous system are tightly linked and connected with our emotions, sensitized by both early painful or traumatic experience, as well as a painful stimulation that you might feel from like a tissue injury. So yeah. that all gets stored within our nervous system, and we kind of remember whether it is. And this is kind of where I go back to, you know, my shoulder blade kind of always popping up when I'm in a stressful situation. Got in a car accident, my right shoulder blade popped up. Car accident wasn't bad, so I wasn't injured, nothing was wrong, but all of a sudden I felt this sharp, you know, shoulder pain just like scream at me. But in the moment, I was like, oh, that's so cool, because I'm fine. Like, I didn't get whiplash. I you know, everything was okay. I just yeah. knew that that was a highly stressful situation, because now I'm in a car accident,
yeah.
that my right shoulder blade, my body remembers, and in that traumatic experience,
yeah.
elicited that pain response.
Yeah. And that would kind of, you know, help to model this mutual maintenance model. It's another one of the models that was pointed out when we mm-hmm. looked into research that has to do with emotional events,
yeah.
or when something emotionally affects us, like a car accident, for example. Even if we rehab, even if we strengthen up the neck, if we did get whiplash, you know, that emotional experience or the traumatic experience of the car accident, if that sticks with us, that might prolong the pain and symptoms. Mm-hmm. And again, kind of talking about those pain circuits, that makes sense when there's the emotional and the memory centers yep. involved. You know, it can really push us towards continuing to experience that pain, even if the tissue damage and all the physical damage has been resolved.
And that's where it was so important for me. As soon as I felt that, I acknowledged it, and I was like, oh my God, how cool. Like, I'm in a stressful situation, that's why this is happening. The pain literally disappeared. But I'm almost positive that I would have tightened up and been like, oh my gosh, I injured myself or something's wrong, it would have continued. You know, I would have continued yeah. to feel that pain. So, and that's where, you know, that they go into, you know, talking about anxiety sensitivity, kind of
Yeah.
Causing a little bit more disability and pain. Fear causing more disability and pain. And we just see these continued correlations throughout the research of how our emotions play a role with us continuing to feel pain.
And that's kind of in that model of shared vulnerability. I mentioned that at the beginning, where like if we are vulnerable in one of those aspects, if our fear is taking over, mm-hmm. if our anxiety is taking over, it gives our overall system less buffer before we start to feel pain. It's kind of the example, we interviewed a guy who talked about a cup of water. You know, normally you start with your cup empty for the day, and then every little stress that hits you, you dump a little bit in. But if we are very anxious about something, or if we have a lot of fears about something, we're starting with our cup 80% full, mm-hmm. 75% full, already overflowing. And that means that we have so much less buffer, and our nervous system is so much more vulnerable to feeling pain more quickly.
Exactly. I mean, and that, again, gets highlighted throughout our research and what we were looking at, especially like in 2005, they proposed that stress intolerance and pain hypersensitivity syndromes result from chronically overburdened stress response system that shifts from that hyper to hypoactivity, it causing reduced effort tolerance and altered inflammatory activity with increased sensitization. So if you can literally impact your inflammation based on your stress response, you know, this is where it becomes so incredibly important of once I feel the pain or once something happens, how am I responding to it? Yeah. So incredibly important. And what am I saying about it?
Yeah. And this reminds me of like sometimes even when we'll be doing podcasts, especially when we were sitting on the really uncomfortable stools, I will start to get that pain in my upper back neck area that I normally get. And even if we're in the middle of a podcast, we're going, and these days are kind of stressful. We have a lot to set up. We have to write down the research. We're doing this
all on our own. We don't have a team behind the cameras.
We're trying to jump between, you know, three or four podcasts in one day, and I'll start getting this pain. And then literally, if I just take deep breaths in my nose, feel my rib cage expand and do that while Jen's talking for, you know, a minute or two, I'll notice those pains just start to recede and go away. Yeah. And I'm just like, oh, wow, I changed nothing but how I was breathing, trying to reduce some of that stress mindfully. And that's where when we start talking about therapies that have been very effective for pain, you know, if we talk about cognitive behavioral therapies mm-hmm. or starting to identify some of the behaviors that may be perpetuating or adding to these pain patterns that we're developing, acceptance commitment therapy, which is funny because my therapist actually recommended I get the acceptance commitment therapy book, mm-hmm. and that's something that I'm reading right now. So it's kind of fun. There was one example in there, it's called like a riding the bus example, where that fear, if that's a person on your bus, they're always there. Like the fear doesn't completely go away. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a really hard thing to remove from our conscious or our subconscious. So they're always riding the bus, but are you going to let them sit right behind the driver and yell at the driver and say, you need to turn here, you need to do this? Or are you going to say, excuse me, sir, you're being disruptive, I need you to move back? Mm-hmm. And that's a tool that I use with myself in anxious situations where it's just like, move back. Yeah. I'm driving the bus. Yeah. You know, and there's just other like mindful stress reduction techniques, all of which have been shown to be really effective in helping people address pain.
Yeah, especially when it comes to mindfulness, that's where we talk about vagal tone now, you know, and even how we're approaching ourselves or the environment we're putting ourselves in when it comes to pain. So if you are maybe going to a clinic that's like really high energy or your therapist is like over there, like yelling, that can cause a stressful environment as well. Like you want to make sure that you're with a therapist if you are working through something physical, you know, physical therapy, that is able to calmly talk to you and use a tone of voice that even changes the response to how your pain is going to feel. Like this is all super important, you know, and we can change our vagal response based on our breath, just like Dom was talking about before. Yeah. You know, am I going to start breathe slower? Am I going to just inhale, exhale through my nose? That all changes our response within our body. And then they did talk about, you know, positive affect. That has such a correlation with how we're, you know, kind of responding to this pain as well. So when we're talking about positive affect, we can think of this like capitalizing on a positive effect, feeling gratitude, cultivating mindfulness, positive reappraisal, focusing on personal strengths rather than what you're not being able to do. And this is something I love doing. And then engaging in like acts of kindness even. So what are we doing on those like little day-to-day basis that can make an impact? Even if you feel like, well, me saying gratitude has nothing to do with my pain, but it does. It automatically shifts your perspective of what we're focusing on. And even the distraction of pain helps to reduce pain.
Yeah. And these aren't easy things, especially if you're somebody that is experiencing pain and is having pain on a daily basis. It's not easy to just say like, okay, I'm going to suddenly start to be grateful for things. But, you know, when you say like, okay, is gratitude really affecting my pain? Like, think about when you wake up and sit up to the edge of your bed. Do you want the first thing you say to be, oh my gosh, my back's in so much pain. Like, this is an awful way to start the day. Think about where that's starting your nervous system. Yep. Are you adding a lot of water to that cup versus sitting up to the edge of the bed? Maybe the pain's there, but to be able to say, man, I'm so grateful to wake up and to be able to sit up to the edge of the bed today.
Yeah. Or even if you can't even relate it to your pain right away, like what else could you be grateful for in the day? You know, even just focusing away from your body for a moment and focusing on other gratitude. So I'm grateful that I have a husband that's downstairs making me a smoothie because that's what I got today. You know, like how can we focus on other things even that start to create and again, distract yourself from pain? What can I do for someone else today that's not necessarily focusing on myself or focusing on my pain? Those are all examples of how we start to distract from this thinking about the pain, thinking about what I can't do, thinking about what's wrong, right? And just focusing on what's going on in the world and what can I do to make a positive effect just outside of what I feel in my body.
And another, you know, positive thing and great thing you can do right in the morning is imagery. You know, there's some research that's showing that imagery can be correlative or it seems promising to be able to help induce an analgesic effect or a pain relieving effect, where even if you wake up and you're laying in bed and you're talking through some gratitude, do some imagery for the day. Say, you know, I'm so excited to get up and go downstairs and make an incredible breakfast for myself before heading off to work. Mm-hmm. I'm so excited to go and greet my kid and wake them up and love them up and, you know, get them ready for school before I drive them in, or whatever it might be, any of that positive imagery. Because again, think about the messages that that's going to be typing into the nervous system and the way that this, it's going to start acting like a disruption to that pain pattern. Mm-hmm. And so rather than typing more messages into the pain pattern, we're starting to write a different code.
And they do show that, you know, optimism itself helps to reduce pain. And that is so hard, especially again, when you just don't feel like this is getting any better, this is worse, like all that kind of stuff. But if we know from research that worrying about pain is associated with higher pain levels, well, then let's just fake being positive about it. Let's just pretend for a moment that I'm going to say, you know, this is great. This is okay. I'm breathing. I'm, you know, I can still move. I'm still going to work. I'm still playing with my kid. Yes, it hurts, right? Yes. Yeah. We're not saying that it doesn't, but we're going to pretend for a moment I'm going to be positive about it, even if you have to fake it. I mean, it's kind of like if you've heard anyone talk about confidence and kind of faking that you're in a room and feeling really confident when inside you're like, oh my God, I don't want to talk to anyone. But you kind of have to fake it at first in order to start to get your nervous system used to something different. And eventually it's going to start to become a little bit more habit. Because again, if we know that worrying about pain is only going to increase pain, let's try your best not to do that then.
Or like you said about like playing with my kid, I'm so excited I could play with my kid. Even if that playing with your kid doesn't look like it did 5 years ago, rather than focusing on, oh, I can't play with my kid like I used to, have some of that optimism or that positivity to say like, I'm so excited to be on the path to playing with my kid like I really want to fully in life. Like to be able to say that and be positive about that and know it and just imagine it in your head. You're combining all these different, you know, methods that we're talking about to, again, start to disrupt what's going on in those pain systems.
Language is everything. And when I saw a lot of patients, language was everything that I worked on with them.
Yeah.
How you talk about your body dictates what you're saying, how the response that you're giving yourself, and if you're catastrophizing it, if you're worrying more, if you're, you know, what kind of affect you're having towards your pain. So how someone would talk about their pain was so incredibly important to me. I want to know, are you saying my back is breaking? My knee is exploding. You know, what are you, think about these messages that we're telling our brain when we say those kinds of things.
Yeah.
You know, rather than my back, it talks to me in the morning a bit, but you know, I can still get up. I can still move. I've learned this breath technique that helps to lower it a tiny bit so I can still go about my day. Whatever that may be, we have to be so mindful of the language we're using toward our pain. And that's where I want to kind of get into, you know, how we both address pain in our own bodies as well.
Yeah, I mean, this reminds me of one patient that I started seeing when I came out to California, and they came to me with a lot of these habits of saying what previous providers had told them. So mm-hmm. kind of like you said, make sure your provider is using a lot of these positive terms, not talking about your joints or your back as broken or out of place or, man, this is really out of whack. Instead, using positive terminology. So if you have a provider that's speaking that way, or, oh, this is the worst back I've ever seen,
yes.
or, oh, I feel so like bad. I feel like so many patients have come to me having the worst whatever
yes.
their doctor has ever seen in a 40-year-old or in a 50-year-old. And it's just awful that doctors even put that in people's heads. Like, mm-hmm. oh, wow, I'm 40 and I have the worst knees you've ever seen. Like, what's the rest of my life going to be like?
Exactly.
You know, like, how do you get that out of your head when a doctor, someone you should respect mm-hmm. and you respect their opinion, tells you that? So instead saying, like, you know, you have some age-related degeneration or some degeneration in your knees, but we see a lot of people that have this and don't have any pain and have fully functional lives.
Oh, wouldn't that be amazing?
And that's the type of terminology that I wanted to start using with this person to be able to say, you know, you're not broken. We can strengthen. Like, let's look at the things you can do right now and see how we can build slightly on those. And being able to work with them on celebrating the small wins, mm-hmm. right? Celebrating the little progressions. Because again, progressing out of pain, especially if it's persistent pain, can take time.
Mm-hmm.
And so after we'd been working for 3-4 months together and they have what they would consider a setback, you know, and they're like, oh, I just fell right back into everything. I'm like, in the first session, you could hardly walk in and get up and, you know, up and down off the table without having severe pain. And right now we're moving, we're lifting weights, we're doing stuff. And you can still do that even though you have a degree of pain. So no, you didn't suddenly fall back to zero. Yeah. Yes, I understand you've had a small setback and you're experiencing some pain today, but how can we just be grateful and continue to push forward on the activities we can work on right now?
Mm-hmm.
And by the time I was done seeing her, like, such a significant change in the way that they talked about their body.
So huge. And I think that, like, that reminds me of a patient too, who was told, she was like in her 30s, and she was told she can't ride her bike anymore because that would be too much flexion in her spine.
On her spine.
And I'm like, let's think about this for a minute. Like, do you know other people that you've seen bike ride around who are much older? And she's like, yeah, actually I have. And I'm like, okay, well, that's possible then. It's possible to be older, possibly have some degeneration of your spine, and still be able to do the activity that you want to do.
Yeah.
So how do we get back to there? And I think that's what's, you know, continuing to remind yourself, like, it might look a little different right now, but it's possible. If I can see someone else who... And we've gone over so much research in other podcasts of people who have disc herniations, like, and are still able to do the activities or have no pain at all.
Yeah.
Right. So if that is possible for one person, why can't it be possible for me?
Yeah.
And reframing that mindset is so incredibly huge.
Totally. And I'd say one of my favorite patient experiences that I've ever had was with this gentleman who got in a snowmobile accident. I think I've told this story before on a podcast. And he had multiple, I think close to a dozen fractures in his pelvis, had one of his collarbones that was complete clean fracture. And he was in tons of pain, understandably so. He's a couple of days out of having this super intense, you know, snowmobile accident. And when I walked into the room, the occupational therapist was walking out, kind of like throwing hands up in the air, like, good luck, you know? And those are my favorite rooms to walk into usually. And he just, the things that he told me right away, and this wasn't a guy who previously was having lots of pain or having pain issues. He's in a very acute situation where this pain's a new thing for him. But all the nurses, the doctors kept telling him the only way we're going to be able to get your pain to come down at all is using pain medications, is giving you some opioids or some morphine. This individual had a previous heroin addiction. And he's like, I am not going to let you put any opioids in my system right now. I have been clean and sober from heroin for however many years. Like, no, I'm not going to let you do that. And that's all they kept telling him. It's like, the only way this pain's going to come down is with pain medications or opioids. And I just kind of sat next to him. And this was pretty early on when I was starting to use breath work with patients. I said, let's try something. Might not be the most comfortable thing in the world, but he wasn't even able to roll over in bed at this point. He couldn't even roll in bed because he was in so much pain. I said, we're going to breathe. We're going to breathe for like 2, 3, 4 minutes. And at the end of that session, you're going to keep breathing and I'm going to have you roll and sit to the side of the bed. And he did it. And he rolled and sat to the side of the bed and was in a little bit of discomfort, but he's just like, oh my gosh, the pain is so much lower than it was when I was just sitting there writhing. And I'm like, okay, you want to get back? He's just like, let's stand up. And so I said, okay. Again, he's got a broken collarbone, so I can't even have a walker with him. But he's in his like his 50s and was a pretty able-bodied guy and did another round of breathing just sitting there. Said, all right, let's try standing up. Stands up with me, again, in a little bit of discomfort. But I could just see his face lighting up, like, this is possible. You know, and he even tried to do some like shuffling steps at the side of the bed, laid back down. And I saw him a couple other times while he was in the hospital. And he just said, been doing that breath stuff every day. You know, it's awesome. And the coolest part was I saw him maybe 2 or 3 months later. I was still working at the same hospital and he walked into outpatient therapy and he just walked on in. He's just like, man, I've been doing that breath stuff like every day. Like, I feel like I just have a new lease on being able to take control of pains and stuff like that. The doctor just wanted me to come in because I've already started work again. And he said, I shouldn't with my collarbone. It's kind of a, I'm going to do it at my own pace kind of guy. Yeah. And he's just like, but I can like lift my arm up and I can lift things. And and so, yeah, he and I just basically sat there and chatted. And it was just like the gratitude that he had for having a tool to address or just touch on his pain other than what everyone else was telling him. Oh, pain medication is the only way. That was pretty powerful. And that was pretty powerful for me too, to be able to see that.
Exactly. And why now you understand why we talk about breath work so much in like every single podcast and how that relates to pain or diagnosis or whatever it is that we're talking about, because it's so incredibly impactful and what it can do. I mean, you changed his outcome completely. You created that positive affect for him. He then have the self-efficacy to continue to do it himself. Yeah. You know, like all these things that, and then he had the optimism that, you know, all of these things that we just talked about, he was then able to develop because having a tool that showed him it's possible.
Even later that day, that the first day I worked with him, the occupational therapist was like, oh, how'd it go with that guy who was in the snowmobile accident? I'm just like, got him standing to the edge of his bed. And they're like, no way. And yeah, and they were just shocked to see his progression over the next few days in the hospital. So it's powerful when you have a provider that's going to work with you and help you find the path that works best for you, and helps you utilize some of these tools that are at your disposal.
Yes. And I think, you know, always thinking about how I'm talking about my pain is so incredibly important. We're going to have pain through life. It's just, whether we get in an accident or whether we get in a stressful event or whether we're not sleeping very much, pain is going to happen in our lives. And it's actually something necessary that our system has to be able to alert us of. It's a good thing. If we don't feel pain, we don't know when we step on something sharp. We don't know, you know, there's so many more negative effects that happen if we don't experience pain. So pain is actually an amazing, incredible alarm system, but it's just information for change. Something in our life needs to change, whether that's physical, emotional, or, you know, environmental. And that's something that, you know, going through pregnancy for my first time, I've been able to experience now myself. And if I'm kind of slumped and relaxing on the couch for a little bit, and then I get up all of a sudden, that first initial step, I feel a zing of pain usually into my pubic symphysis area. But I also know, oh, this is a new sensation for my body because I've never had this much mobility at my pelvis due to the relaxin and increased hormones. So this is, my brain is suspecting something new. And the moment I do that, the moment I take a couple more steps, no more pain, because I know my body has the stability. I know my body is strong. I know my body has the support. And this is just a new sensation, not necessarily a pain. So I talk about, you know, the sensations I feel in my body rather than the pains that I feel in my body. And it creates a whole new experience. And I'm able to go through this pregnancy still lifting, still doing mobility, still feeling great. So I think language is so incredibly powerful, and our mindset is everything when it comes to pain. Thanks so much for sticking around and listening to us understand and talk about how mindset plays such a role in pain. If you know someone who experiences chronic pain or is continuously going through pain episodes, please pass this episode along to them. It really helps so that people start to learn and we can all have the tools necessary to really feel the best within our bodies.